The talk is entitled America's Police Are Out of Control. As I said, it'll be divided into three segments. The historical context, I've given you my own situation. I became a cop in 1953. I served in three police agencies for 36 years through 11 rank levels, mostly badly and in inferior performance, but still three departments. I've written 12 books on the policing, which have proven to be a sovereign remedy to insomnia. And I have served as an expert witness for about 20 years, testifying in police cases all over the United States, one of which was the Central Park jogger, about which there are still many things that could be said and a lot of news that could be made, notwithstanding our beloved president's assertion that the five ought to be executed. If anybody ought to be executed, it's not them. They are more innocent of the crime than he is. They can prove their innocence. He can't. Anyway, the reality is that policing is in a parlous state. At the moment, it is in disarray. There is not a single police chief in America you would call a reform chief, such as Patrick V. Murphy in 1970 to 73, during the Serpico issue in New York. There's none of that. And the reasons are many, and we will go into them. Mostly it has to do with mayors who have no clue about who they appoint as police chiefs, usually content to adopt a pet rock and install them in the police headquarters. And the police chiefs, black, white, male, female, are all blue.
Are you listening to it?
And they're there to
very good. Listen.
Their orders from the union and just cling to power, as happens everywhere.
Everything is fine.
So the mayors are principally to blame because of their ignorance and disinterest and the simple medium of adopting whoever is next in line to be appointed, and they're usually some feckless caretaker who's very happy to endorse feather bedding, waste, bloat. It makes the notion of defunding the police a tempting idea, but there is not a single police department in America that could not be cut 20% of its budget if the police chief was willing to cut the fat and cut the waste and the duplication and the bloated officer corps and all the unnecessary units and work people 40-hour weeks, 8-hour days, and insist on performance and accountability. That has not happened. But America today is involved in a very serious problem. The two most serious problems that America faces as we speak, in my judgment, are racism and income inequality. We will be talking about racism today. Racism is how the dominant white overclass oppresses and controls or attempts to control the impoverished underclass, black, very frequently. Aristotle said thousands of years ago, poverty is the cause of revolution and crime, a lesson we have not yet learned. So the reality is that the police are basically hired to control the underclass, and the underclass is mostly black. And we have emblematic cases now coming forward that demonstrate and illustrate the point very, very eloquently. George Floyd, black male, rather feckless, involved in some petty crime, trying to pass a $20 bill. The police are summoned, four cops, one of whom is an alpha male, aggressive, with a long history of involvement in settlements and accusations of brutality and so on. So he is an alpha male, a thumper, leads the charge, And the other three are grazers. They're not a meat eater. They're grazers. They go along, get along, and they're complicit. And that's, in a nutshell, the problem of American policing. Leaders, alpha males, thumpers, lots of medals, heroic, first ones through the door, very tough, very brave, and they set the tone, create the culture, and lead the charge. What happened in the George Floyd case is not really well understood. And my charge here is to try to make it clear. And I hope that you will come away and thinking, well, gee, I didn't know that. For example, George Floyd was not subjected to a chokehold. It had nothing to do with a chokehold. He was strangled by a knee on his neck. And so it was not a chokehold, it was a strangulation. The cop never intended to kill George Floyd. He intended to put him in his place and to teach him a lesson. The death was accidental. Consequently, you cannot call it murder, you call it manslaughter. The other three cops were complicit and involved, just as the driver in the Justine Damon case was complicit and involved. The shooter went to prison, was fired. The driver was never touched. It is not an accident that the police union endorsed the prosecutor for re-election. These are things that go on behind the scenes and little favors. The four cops in the George Floyd case, to get back to it, were fired illegally. The mayor and the police chief had no authority to fire them. On some frigid day in January or February, some timorous arbitrator is going to return them to the ranks. They're going to be restored to duty. They will be owed back pay. They have been indicted. They will probably be convicted of manslaughter and complicity in manslaughter. And then they will be legally fired. In the meantime, the mayor and the police chief will have experienced a terrible humiliation and a defeat. And the union will demonstrate once again that its principal value is to defend thumpers, to defend cops accused of wrongdoing. The growth of police unions in America is really startling. It reached its apotheosis during Trump's nomination. Nationwide television, like four principal speakers, and who is one of them? Pat Lynch, president of the New York City Police Department's union. Pat Lynch really runs the New York City Police Department. It's instructive to note that his two sons are cops. And yet, every cop in America today, if you stop them and say, "What's going on, officer? How are you?" they would say four things to you. They would say, "The job sucks. The chief is a psycho. We are going to hell in a handbasket. And morale has never been lower." Yet nobody quits. And if you manage to fire them, which is very, very difficult because the union is in the legislative halls, busily supporting candidates of their choosing and getting laws passed to protect the tenure of the police, nobody quits. If you fire them, they'll fight you to the death to be restored. They are well paid. They have good benefits. And the role of the union used to be to get benefits and wages. That's over. They are now very well paid. They have tremendous benefits. And the union really can't get them very much of anything anymore. But they can protect the thumpers. Now, the thumpers are about 1 to 2% of the ranks, but they set the tone, create the climate, and shape the culture. So they have to be the target of any reform. Police chiefs, such as in Minneapolis during the George Floyd case, are, can be black, white, male, or female, but they're all blue. The chief of police in Minneapolis during the George Floyd case is black. He wants to work with the union. He wants to cooperate with them, be conciliatory. He needs their help. He needs their support. And he does not need the voter no confidence from them. He will go along and get along. Wonderful person, just a terrific guy, but he is not doing the people's business. He is not holding the police accountable. He is not leading them as an instrument of service to the public, providing public service. So the state of American policing is really Paulus, who is, in my opinion, one of the great heroes of the age, Colin Kaepernick, who protested police brutality long before the George Floyd case, knelt during the Star Spangled Banner, which in my judgment was an act of respect and deference, and was fired for it and can't be reemployed. And meanwhile, the man who sought 5 deferments, refused to serve in the military, lied to the American people, pardons criminals, commits crimes himself, as Cyrus Vance will probably demonstrate, as he demonstrates that he tax evasion and emoluments, fraud with Deutsche Bank, and other crimes. I expect our outgoing president, whose last day this is, to be indicted, convicted, and sent to prison. Tomorrow he will be powerless. You don't want to be powerless with all the enemies he's made, and that's where he's heading. So the state of American policing is powerless. There is no oversight. There is no leadership. New York, for example, you saw Pat Lynch when the president was nominated, strident, struggling, strong, tough. He runs the department. His two sons are cops. The current police chief in New York, you couldn't name him if you wanted to. The mayor is scorned and humiliated by the police union. Why? Because he happens to be married to a black woman. That's why. And that gives him all the reason they want. So it's a terrible tragedy for me. I love policing. Herman Melville once said, policing was my Harvard and Yale. No, he said whaling was his Harvard. I said policing was my Harvard and Yale. And it was. And I'm very grateful for it. And cops do a great job. I love cops. I served for many, many years observing their work. But I also testified against them when I thought they were wrong. And I thought I could make them better by making them stronger, by testifying against them, by telling the truth. For example, in the George Floyd case, I would take George Floyd's side of it. But in the Breonna Taylor case in Lexington, Kentucky, I would take the police side of it. There are no innocents in this, not the police, not the deceased. Breonna Taylor had two boyfriends. One was appears to have been a very legitimate guy, and the other one seems to have been a drug dealer. The police secured a search warrant. They had to convince a judge that they would find drugs in her house. She had not broken with her boyfriend. The police were aware that there was a black male in the house. They assumed it was the drug dealer. They secured a search warrant, announced themselves. That is in dispute, but I believe it, they did. So at least one neighbor said they did. Broke in, and a gun battle ensued. If you don't think that people are going to get killed in a gun battle with the police, they are mistaken. The first shot, indisputably, was fired by her boyfriend, who had a legal gun and thought it was the other boyfriend breaking into the house and the apartment, and shot and wounded a cop in a gun battle you're going to get killed. Breonna Taylor was killed. She is not an innocent, and the family got $12 million and furthered the cause of a major litigation industry that is burgeoning throughout the nation and doing great stuff. So the Breonna Taylor case, I would have testified for the police. In the George Floyd case, I would have testified against the police. And each of these cases is complicated. There are no innocents. Even Eric Garner, who was killed in New York, was selling illegal cigarettes. Not exactly child molestation or mass murder, still a crime, folks. So the reality is that American policing everywhere, despite the fact that large numbers of women have come into the ranks, not enough blacks. And the reason why we don't have a lot of blacks in policing in America is black police leaders keep saying they are the enemy. Don't join them. You will be a quisling if you do. That's not the message they ought to be conveying. They ought to be conveying the message, join them, reform from within, be a part of it, of the reform, be a part of the strength and cleanliness of the agency. But that's not what they say. So the reality is that America is in trouble. The mayors are choosing badly. Police chiefs are up from the ranks, feckless caretakers, superannuated supernumeraries, tolerating feather bedding and waste. In Minneapolis, cops work a four-day week and hold second jobs, live in the suburbs, do not participate in the life of the city, and have a champion until tomorrow noon in the President of the United States, who is tremendously sympathetic to police abuse. And every time I've seen him speak to the police, he is delivering a dog whistle. You don't have to be so nice to these people. These people, we all know who they are. It was no accident that Pat Lynch spoke at the nominating meeting of the name Trump, the Republican candidate, one of maybe four, national television. So the reality is there's feather bedding, short work days, lots of privilege, lots of protections. And the unions are there to protect the thumpers. The thumpers constitute about 2% of the rank. So they're not a large numbers, but they don't have to be. In union meetings, when they speak, everybody listens. Their chests are covered with medals. They're the first ones through the ranks. And parenthetically, isn't it wonderful that the coach of the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, and may his name live in fame and glory, refused the Medal of Freedom from our beloved President Donald Trump, who will take his criminal pursuits into retirement tomorrow at noon. Bill Belichick, God bless you. So now what might we do? Well, in 1970, when New York City faced the Serpico scandal, the mayor was desperate for a reformer. He needed a reformer. In 1980, the mayor of Minneapolis needed a reformer. They undertook nationwide searches. One of the mayor's aides called me, and I said, there is this wispy little fellow traveling the country, serving as chief of police here and there and everywhere, a pariah out in the wilderness. He might be a good choice. Named Patrick V. Murphy, that man became my model and my hero. He delivered 30 months of unbelievable reforms and left the New York City Police Department cleaner, more focused, more effective than it ever had been in its history or has been since. A tremendous hero. 30 months is a pariah. That is the reality. What might we do to reform the police? The number one institution in our society and the most important of all and the one that our leaders, the 1% of rulers of America, encounter every day is the New York Times. God bless it. A free and untrammeled press is the greatest adornment of our civilization. And with who is the number one target of our beloved president with all of his shady enterprises and mendacity, a word made popular by Tennessee Williams in one of his plays about the South. And it was Burl Ives who said it, mendacity. Well, that's a strong suit. So the reality is that his principal target is the fourth estate. Nobility, clergy, peasantry, and a free media. It is the greatest adornment and the most important institution of our society, a free and untrammeled press. What happens when a dictator takes over a country? The pamphleteers take to the basements and turn out their information. Information is power. We are a free people with the best and freest press that has ever been. People used to ask me, is the press fair to you? And when I was in public life, and my answer always was, no, they're not. They're generous. If they were fair, they would expose me for the idiot that I am. But they insist on praising me and saying nice things about me. What an absurdity. The press is the greatest adornment of our society. So a free press, you know, in 1970, the New York Times appointed some brilliant young reporters to the police beat. People like Eric Pace and David Burnham and others who went on to become famous journalists. The police beat because of Serpico. And they turned the Times into a great vehicle for reform. That's what we need. We need a more resourceful press. They need to be more resourceful, investigative reporting, getting at the facts. The reality is, of whether I know anything or not about anything, nobody ever contacts me. I am Mr. Irrelevance. That might tell you something. I have been through a fair amount, presumably the repository of a lot of mistakes. I must have learned something, but the reality is that no one really has any particular interest in what I may have to say. So pity nonsense, to be sure, but that's the reality, and who can blame them? I look like an ugly little old lady at this point, and I can't blame people for ignoring it. But the truth of the matter is that the enemy are the police unions. The police chief is management. The police union is labor. It is an adversarial relationship. The role of the police union has become to protect the thumpers. That is their role. Nobody seems to understand this. So the reality is that we have a long way to go. During the demonstrations, for example, just looking at them, in the Capitol, we saw what Hillary Clinton correctly defined as the deplorables. That's what we saw. Fascists, gun nuts, evangelists, some cops, unfortunately, some general motorcyclists, racists. That's what we saw. But in the opposite, the Black Lives Matter demonstrations, we see a much greater complexity. The people in the Capitol on January 6th were all of one ilk, basically white, flag carrying, super patriots, fascists. The people in Black Lives Matter are a complex mix. The overwhelming majority want to make this a better country, a country of more justice, a country of more equal incomes, and a country that is freer, more democratic, more responsive. But within that group, There is a small minority of arsonists, looters, thieves, and scoundrels. And they swim in the larger sea, and they break windows and smash windows and rob drugs and alcohol and television sets and so on. They do exist. So what the extreme right does is call them all by the same label. The overwhelming majority of the protesters in Black Lives Matter want to make the country better and more democratic and more just and more legal. The overwhelming majority of the protesters in the Capitol are fascists, anarchists, and destroyers. That is the reality. So today we are at an unfortunate crossroads. The police establishment is in really bad shape, and there is no hope for reform. No one is writing about it, no one is speaking about it. The overwhelming majority of the American people are stumbling and staggering about looking for an answer. They don't even know who the villains are, much less the heroes. Tomorrow, we get relief. Trump vacates the White House. He will then be at the mercy of his enemies, and I know they are legion, and he will be powerless. A pretty dangerous combination. Good luck. As Sarah Palin would so wisely put it, how's that working out for you, Donald? Good luck. So that's pretty much all I have to say. Irrelevancy and bullshit and nonsense, and there it is. So good luck to all of you. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to take them.
Yeah, Tony, can you go through a couple of things that you think would make the police department more efficient? You've mentioned the 4-day work week, for instance, and four days, 10 hours a day, that's a nice union demand that allows for a lot of extra curricular work, you know. But what are some of the other things that and why is the 4-day work week inefficient and bad?
Okay, 8-hour work day, 40-hour work week, one person patrols. You could immediately double the people responding to 911 calls in New York City at this very moment by instituting one person patrols, and they don't need two person patrols. That is feather bedding. There is a bloated officer corps. Reduce the upper ranks. Minneapolis has 4 chiefs with less crime than I experienced with 3. It has a mounted unit. Good grief. Who needs cops on horseback? It has a public information officer. Why can't every cop deal with the press? I never had a press information officer. I never had a mounted patrol. I never had all these chiefs. Today, the Minneapolis Police Department has over 850 cops. I had 700 with more crime and more violence and instituted 911, and we responded to true emergencies within 6 minutes. That hasn't happened since. All you get now from the chief is excuses and evasions, and he needs more cops, and he needs more this and more that. Go to one-person patrols, 8-hour work days, around the clock, make your priorities, street crime, quick response to true emergencies, and traffic control. Get with it, manage. The current police chief in Minneapolis, in New York, in Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, they don't believe in management. They believe in getting along, going along, and stirring no pots. They are management, the union is labor. It's adversarial.
How do you handle thumpers if the police won't investigate? In the recent case of Terrence Franklin, the city just paid out $1 million in terms of damages and so on. The defense attorney, and I think you and I differ on this, but the defense attorney, the plaintiff's attorney, said that Lucas Peterson executed Terrence Franklin, and that hasn't been refuted. The city did not contest that. You know, what steps can we as citizens take to put pressure on the city council, or pressure on the mayor, and to put pressure on the police chief or something? What's the vehicle that we can do to get some kind of honest answers about what the hell happened to Terrence Franklin?
Number one, choose the mayor more carefully. Number two, insist on the appointment of a reform chief. Number three, insist on transparency and accountability from that police chief. And the way he does that is by being personally involved in a strong internal affairs division. The internal affairs is a powerful instrument in the hands of the police chief to promote accountability. I always appointed a promising young executive as who had his future before him, always a he, and although I helped to bring a lot of women into policing, and insist on accountability. What is lacking is accountability. Where is the evidence that the police chief of Minneapolis had the slightest interest in what happened in those cases, or that the police chief in New York had any interest in Eric Gardner, or even that the police chief in Lexington, Kentucky had any interest in Breonna Taylor? None. There isn't any. And there is no consequence. They go on getting appointed. The same chief of police is in Minneapolis today, as was the during the George Floyd case. So the reality is there are no consequences, no accountability, no. It's all a bunch of nice, nice people getting along. They're wonderful. The mayor is a great guy. You will never meet a nicer person, more courteous, sweeter, more intelligent than the current chief of police of Minneapolis. Far superior to anything I could aspire to. But the reality is that there is no accountability. So you're looking at accountability, and civilian review boards don't work. The FBI does not want to investigate its colleagues in the ranks, and the press does not have truly entrepreneurial investigative reporters, and they don't know it. They wouldn't even know what to look for. So if you look at the accounts, even in the New York Times today, about police actions, you get a pretty comprehensive description of what happened, but its analyses are deficient. Well, first of all, defunding the police is nonsense. But done right, 20% reduction in every police budget in every city in the United States, with the assurance that the police chief will adopt it for real reforms, reduce the supervisory levels, 8-hour days, 40-hour weeks, one-person patrols, elimination of feather bedding and wasteful organizations. On that basis, you would get much better service, much more accountability, at tremendous savings in money. I returned a surplus to the Minneapolis City Council 8 of the 9 years that I was chief. And the only reason I didn't on the 9th year is because there was a fiscal crisis in the state, which screwed me up. So the reality is, economies are possible, efficiencies are possible. It's called capitalism. Introduce capitalism to the police ranks. If you ran the New York City Police Department the way IBM is run, you would have them responding to calls within 6 minutes. Thumpers would be excised from the ranks, and everybody would be happier. There would be more arrests, more bums arrested. Law and order has become a bad word. I was and am an ardent law and order advocate. And anybody who thinks that the framers of the United States Constitution were liberal wimps is an idiot. They were not. They permitted very aggressive policing, but they insisted on rights against self-incrimination, intrusive searches, all those other protections. But they were not liberal wimps, and they gave us plenty of powers. You can have decoys, you can have stakeouts, you can have stings, perfectly legal, and I employed all of them.
I got a question. Sherry, I'll get closer here. I agree with, 95% of what Tony said, and I've been a great admirer for years. But the one thing I solidly disagree on is that Chauvin didn't intend to kill him, and I think that you get that not from police experience, which I have none, and Tony's got everything, but you get it from being a human being and living for 80 plus years and judging people by looking at their eyes. And the experienced people I know, like Don Samuels and myself and others, looked into Chauvin's eyes, and he had his knee on the guy's neck, and he wanted to kill him. I think it's very clear that he wanted to kill him, and that's murder. And everybody, I don't see how he could get off on that conviction. If he gets off that he didn't want to murder him, then I think everybody's going to lose faith in the process.
Well, first of all, a prosecutor who is happy to take the endorsement of the police union and who did not prosecute the driver in the Justine Damon case, charged him with manslaughter. So the prosecutor does not believe that the officer Chauvin intended to murder Floyd. I don't believe it. I don't think any experienced observer of that event thinks that Chauvin intended to murder Floyd. What he intended to do was to put him in his place, an uppity black, and teach him a lesson, and was perfectly happy to put his knee on his throat for 8.5 minutes, which resulted in a death. But it was not murder, and he was not charged with murder. He was charged with manslaughter, and I thought that was the correct charge.
Yeah, well, I humbly disagree 100%. I feel confident that there are
That's the most encouraging thing I've heard today. Because I've never known you to be right. I love Joe Silvaggio, and no one has done more for the poor people in Minneapolis than Joe Silvaggio and Mary Jo Copeland. So just remember that.
Okay. Good to be wrong, then.
So I have a question. This is your... This is Annie Brody. Annie Brody here, Tooch.
Jesus, I can hear you. I can't believe it. Who is this?
It's Michael's sister, Anne. Shirley and Leon's child. Yes, that one. Okay, great to see you. Great to hear you as always. And here's my question, and it's really more at a meta level. So you talk about with Trump's departure, at least from the position at noon tomorrow, that you, what I'm hearing you say is that you have some optimism that, the sort of very meta level, the forces of evil will be pushed back a little bit. So I just wondered if you could sort of speak to that.
Good. Well, nice to talk to you, Anne. Love you. Good luck with your impending marriage. God bless you. I'll be happy to officiate. That's a very, very interesting question, and I'm sorry I didn't address it earlier. There is within the American political body a permanent body of deplorables, and they are motorcyclists, evangelists, fascists, gun nuts, racists. They're white, they're undereducated, hopelessly naive. 1968, yeah. George Wallace brought them out. 1938, Father Coughlin brought them out. Huey Long brought them out. They are a permanent fixture in American life. The crazy, now, the insults I would have joined, I know that organization was probably invented for me. Incels being involuntarily celibate. Except for that organization, that's just a permanent body of Americans, probably 20% of the electorate. We used to monitor them very carefully, and that's a whole other lecture about law enforcement's monitoring of subversive elements, right and left. The left, of course, can be crazy too. But we infiltrated, for example, the Nation of Islam, the American Nazi Party, National Renaissance Party. You have to monitor that group. The only organization in America today that is monitoring that element is the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Right, right. They're the
and
only
that's one. Not a government agency. So it is what it is. We tend to ignore them. And in the Capitol, of course, you suddenly saw them. I love the footage. I think the Capitol event was a good event. I love it because it's going to force us to do precisely, to answer your question. It's going to force us to say, who are these people? Where do they come from? And they're white, not very well educated, not sophisticated, frequently rural, and full of hate and resentment and defeat. We are making progress on the racist issue. I love watching blacks on television, and the Ivy League is doing a great job of bringing blacks into its halls. You know, the greatest challenge to the admission of blacks into our superior educational institutions today are not whites, Asians. That's the most prestigious high school in New York City has 73% Asian alumni.
That's right.
73%, and a city that is not notably Oriental. So our society is very complex, and that's why fundamentally I'm a sociologist. People think I was a cop. I wasn't. I was a sociologist. If our time is up, why don't we just have a little dirt thrown on our faces and say amen?
Dagmar asked a question earlier that...
he can't hear you, Eddie. Speak up.
Dagmar asked a question. You have such a wealth of experience and wisdom. Are you able to share any of this with the Minneapolis mayor and or police chief or on any kind of consistent basis? Obviously, they're not aware of your monthly column in Southside Pride, but what is there a vehicle through which you can communicate with the mayor and the chief of police?
I can put you on chat.
Well, that's great.
Want to be on chat?
The Bible has the answer, as it does for a lot of other things. A prophet is not without honor, save in his own country. So that no one is listening, but just on the off chance that somewhere, somehow, someday, somebody might listen, I've just concluded a memoir, the title of which is Confessions of a Police Misfit. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Hey, Tony, I would just, my name is Cass Lewart. I just would like to say, if you wouldn't have elected Joe Biden, I would nominate you for the president.
I didn't hear it.
You would be nominated for president.
Yeah, well, I wasn't born in America, and that was the most crushing reality that I had to face, that I could not be president. I'm waiting to be Caudillo. Well, thank you for the question. I am not familiar with the report. I never read it or encountered it, but I have met with Chief Arredondo and gone over these issues with him and concluded in writing he is a loser. If you want an exposition on that, I'll be happy to give it, but brevity is the soul of wit, as the greatest writer in the English language reminds us.
Well, go ahead. Tell us why he was a loser.
I met with Chief Arredondo, who was good enough to come and have lunch with me, and he invited himself. A charming, delightful, courteous, sweet man. Liked him a lot. And he's black, which is even better. When I said to him, you know, Randy, you are management, the union is labor, you've got to fight the union, he said, I want to work with them and I need their cooperation. And it was in that moment that I concluded he was a loser. You know, the garrulous geezers can go on indefinitely. and I'm living in Geezerville, what more mellifluous and unforgettable tone than the sound of my own voice? Well, reforming the police, I think, requires a special predisposition. Let me tell you where I come from and why. I became a police reformer for only one reason, and nobody can figure that out. I am an impoverished immigrant. My father was a stoker, shoveling coal into the bellies of ships. We experienced tremendous poverty. The police department lifted me up, gave me a tremendous power, enriched me, enabled me to look after my family, live in nice houses, educate my children, have two cars, and I needed to give something back to this great country of ours. So if I had to conclude with anything, it would be God bless America. It made me what I am, and I never cease being grateful to it. And this is how I give it back, to try to make it a better place if I can, from my own obviously twisted perspective, but try to make it better. That's something that is no longer so much in currency, because we don't have that many European immigrants. But we came from Spain, December 22, 1937, struggled tremendously, experienced real grinding poverty, and this country lifted me up, educated and enriched me, and made me comfortable. And what do I give back, you know? Well, you know, the current leader of the Minneapolis Police Union is Trump's greatest fan in the Twin Cities, and probably his major asset. It's hard for me, I don't know Schmidt, it is hard for me to imagine it could be worse. Eddie Feline has spoken out about Bob Crow much more eloquently than I ever could. He represents, he embodies everything that is wrong with American policing. And the fact that he and Trump are exiting at the same time is an undeserved luxury of being visited upon Minneapolis and the U.S., for which you ought to be grateful.
Well said.
Since we have till 4 o'clock, can I just ask one more question about the union management and Rondo's answer? There must be some unions that work cooperatively with corporations who you praised earlier, like 3M. They must work with the unions rather than just be adversaries. Can you think of that's a possible solution to working together, sometimes unions and management?
A union model. some of the left-wing hospital unions seem to have been very interested in the welfare of their clients. But I love unions. I don't want to be an opponent of unions. I think unionism and education were my salvation. Unionism. So I love unions, but they have a role to play. Their role is benefits and salary, not to run the agency and not to protect thumpers. So unions are organizations. Any organization on this planet, Earth, that is given too much power, I don't care what it is, will abuse it. And that includes the Catholic Church. Mirabil dictu, amazing. Imagine if the Catholic Church can engage in pederasty, who is safe from the excesses of power? No one. So unions have become too powerful. Chiefs have become too accommodating. Mayors have become too ignorant, and we're screwed. Absolutely. Love you.
If you want to contact Tony, you can write to editor at Southside Pride, and I'll get a message to him. Is that okay?
Yes, Tony. Thank you.
Editor.
God bless America.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. And thank you, Michael Brody, for saving this Zoom and doing such beautiful work with it. A mentor, and namaste to you, buddy. Okay, thank you.